The American Bridge finally came up on Hulu because season two started. So I flew through that. It's good.
That looked cool, yeah.
The American one's done really well. Season two, I'm a little curious where they're going to go. Like, last week was the premiere. It's okay. That's one of those that, like, the first 11 episodes of season one are really, really strong. And then the last two kind of finish with a limp. But I'm hoping season two picks up. Franka Potenta shows up. She's the villain in season two. Badass.
Where has she been?
I don't know.
At the bottom of a...
Hiding under a bridge, I think.
Oh.
That's where they found her when they were casting for it.
Then she got shot in one of those Bourne movies and, like,
the second one, sunk. In, like, the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. And that's where she's been at ever since. What's up? This is Movies on Up. It's bad news for the bad guys again. It's good news for you guys because my co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella, is seated right across the table from me.
Ah, that's me.
That's Dave. I'm Ryan. It's bad news for the bad guys. ... Again is our tagline for the week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, we'd like to hear about it. Send your guess to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess directly on our Twitter page, @moviesonup on the Twitter, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. I have no idea how social media works. I don't care. I've deputized Dave to handle all of that.
And I do it poorly.
And he does it poorly, but at least he knows what's up. If you know what's up with It's Bad News for the Bad Guys, again, comes from, send us your guess if you are correct. And if we choose you, you won't have to be home alone because we'll send you a prize package.
Or three.
This week, in honor of the new Scarlett Johansson flick, Lucy, which looks like a movie that both Dave and I will enjoy, we thought we would give you our five favorite Scarlett Johansson movies, five that we definitely enjoy. And I can honestly say that after looking at her filmography, I was able to pick five movies that I legitimately enjoy. I was a little bit worried at first that I might not be able to find five.
I could have done a top 10.
Okay.
I really could have. And that's generally when I come up with when I pitch ideas to you about, like, hey, let's do favorite Scarlett Johansson movies. It's basically just that I've looked and thought, oh, wow, I like a lot more than I would have guessed. I had no problem. I have a lot of also-rans because some of them I kind of left off just for the sake of leaving them off. So my top five maybe not be a pure top five.
As long as there's five, I'm going to say it's a pure top five. That's fine with me. But what the hell? What is your fifth favorite ScarJo movie?
My number five, not necessarily a Scarlett Johansson movie as she's third fiddle in the movie. It's an Anthony Hopkins movie all the way. It is 2012's Hitchcock. I generally don't like biopics or biopics either. I'm not a fan of either.
Don't like either of those movies.
No. This one I thought was done really well. I liked Hopkins's
Alfred Hitchcock.
I forgot who he played in this.
He played Alfred Hitchcock.
I liked him as Hitchcock, and I liked Helen Mirren and his wife. And even more so, I like Scarlett Johansson as Janet Leigh. I thought the dynamic between her and Anthony Hopkins was really, really good because you have this, you know, just relationship between director and actress. I thought it was played off very, very well. And Scarlett Johansson's always been very classically beautiful to me. So seeing her play an old-time movie star was kind of perfect. Jessica Biel did awesome in this movie, too. Like, I think everybody did very awesome in this movie. And she went toe-to-toe with Helen Mirren and Anthony Hopkins. And I was kind of shocked this movie didn't get more love other than makeup for the Oscars, because it was a really well-done movie, and the acting was superb. Scarlett Johansson was right there, and that's what I've always loved about Scarlett Johansson, is she's one of the prettiest girls on the planet, but she's never relied on just being a pretty face. She's done movies like this, and like my top five, none of them are, they're all, you know, maybe like she challenges herself as an actress, which I've always liked, and Hitchcock was no exception to that.
I like this movie a lot. I'm glad you put it on your list because I left it off mine. I mean, I enjoy Psycho. It's one of my favorites, and I like Hitchcock a lot. I feel like maybe not recently. I maybe haven't mentioned my love for Al or whoever it was that Anthony Hopkins plays in this movie. But I like movies about the making of movies because I don't want to read books about the making of movies. So it was very interesting to find out the story of how much Hitchcock did put, how much faith he had that this was going to be a hit. And it's kind of strange now to think about that, oh, absolutely, Psycho's a classic film. I can't believe that at any point somebody might have trepidation as to whether Hitchcock's Psycho would work. And so, just that whole dynamic was really fun to watch. And I agree. I think Johansson was great in the movie. I really liked Helen Mirren as kind of the one person that always sort of did stand behind Hitchcock. Thought that was really rad. And she's a character that I really didn't know that much about. I mean, I think people know a lot about Hitchcock, and they know a lot about his relationship with a lot of his leading ladies, which is definitely front and center in this movie. And I think with Janet Leigh, I think people are pretty familiar with her and her family. So just to hear kind of the story, or to see some of the story of Hitchcock's wife, I thought was pretty rad. My number five is also a period piece. It is from 2006, directed by Brian De Palma. It is The Black Dahlia, starring Josh Harnett, Aaron Eckhart, and Scarlett Johansson. I've made no secret that I love Hitchcock movies. I've also made it no secret that I love me a good film noir. This isn't particularly a great example of a good film noir, however. It is an example of one starring Scarlett Johansson and a pretty good supporting cast. It is, as the name would indicate, based on the Black Dahlia murder, which is one of the most notorious unsolved murder cases in Los Angeles. And I think that true crime stories specifically appeal to me in a very 48 hours kind of way. And film noir is a great genre to tell that story. With that being said, I think that De Palma takes almost every opportunity that he can to make what I would refer to as his version of a film noir. We talk about directors maybe getting in the way, and I think that he really kind of dances on that line here. It was shot beautifully. It was nominated for Best Cinematography, but cinematography isn't necessarily a hallmark of film noir. The idea behind the genre is that it's basic, it's very gritty, which I think to tell, you know, some of these murder stories, that's what you want. You want it to feel very realistic. Like I said, cinematography, not really a hallmark of film noir, but what is a hallmark is this archetype of a femme fatale, which I think Johansson does a great job of in this movie. I wouldn't necessarily say that having chemistry with either of the two leads is simple, but she carries it off. And the thing that I find most interesting is I find her to be non-decade specific hot. Which, like, the way she looks, yeah, you can absolutely see her as being gorgeous in the 1940s. But there are actresses that, and I'll think of, like, Megan Fox is a good example. I don't think people in the 70s would think that Megan Fox is attractive. But Scarlett Johansson, you can pluck her in any decade, and she would be one of the most beautiful women in the world because she is non-decade specific hot.
I agree. And I have another, I hate focusing on a woman's looks, like an actress's look. And I think we do pretty good on this show of not really playing the whole sex thing. And yeah, we joke about Anna Kendrick and stuff, but
that's not a joke.
Because of her career. She's beautiful. Like she's classically beautiful. Like I said, I can see her as a movie star in the 50s or 60s or the 40s, but she's so pretty and naturally pretty that I can also buy her as an everyday girl that I would maybe see at the mall or that maybe works at a zoo in 2011's We Bought a Zoo. I really like Scarlett Johansson, and I like that she does always challenge herself. Somebody as gorgeous as her and as talented as her could have just banked a career off of romantic comedies. You don't see as many of your talented actresses now doing that, like they did in maybe the 90s or 80s, your big-time movie star actresses were basically rom-com actresses. Other than The Nanny Diaries, which is probably the only... I hope that didn't make your list because
no,
I just
didn't.
Ruined it. That's really the only like straight-up rom-com I can think of that she did. Because when she does do the rom-com, there it's like 2011's We Bought a Zoo, which it's a Cameron Crowe movie. I have trouble counting Cameron Crowe movies as rom-coms because there's so much more to them. And then she did one that shows up later on my list that isn't a traditional romantic comedy. So, I mean, I really liked her in this because I bought her as this local girl that cares so much about this zoo. And you have Matt Damon coming in just buying a zoo on a whim. And I understand the anger there. I thought she was really good. I mean, the whole cast is good. That little girl is phenomenal in this movie. Matt Damon was perfect for it. The little Fanning, Elle Fanning was in it. So many,
the littlest Fanning.
Yeah, so many good people in this movie. I mean, the cast is solid all the way through. The kid from Almost Famous. It's a really good movie. It's a really good Cameron Crowe movie. And I thought she's kind of perfect for Cameron Crowe leading lady. Like, her being the female lead in a Cameron Crowe movie sounds perfect. Just like Emma Stone is the lead in the next one. It's like, oh, yeah, here's these beautiful women that have this natural feel to them, which is what Cameron Crowe writes best as far as women. So I think this was a great combination of her being perfect for a Cameron Crowe movie and being perfect for this movie. I don't know. It seemed like it kind of went under the radar. Like, people didn't dig it as much as most other Cameron Crowe movies. I thought it was really good. I really like it. The cast is exceptional, and she's a strong part of that.
My number four, along with my number five, you could probably put both of these movies in the I wanted to like them more than I did category, though not because of Johansson. My number four is the 2013 Don John, directed by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, starring JGL, Scarlett, and Julianne Moore. Again, she's excellent at playing a representation of a particular type of person, more of a stereotype than an archetype, I guess. I'm not sure if actually having been born in New York made it easier for her to pull off the whole Jersey girl thing, but she played it to an absolute T. Tony Danza is phenomenal in this movie. He absolutely hits his role as the angry Italian dad right on the head, almost like he was just born to be an Italian guy. Really, the acting is great all the way around, and I think that Joey made a really good attempt at his first time behind the camera. I think I like the idea behind the movie, what he's saying with it, more than the finished product, which is probably why I have it on my list, and I would defend it when a lot of people really don't like it all that much. At the very least, it's worth watching to see the interaction with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Tony Danza. Dinner with Danza, that needs to be spun off. I could watch that character in a movie of his own. It's Scarlett in a cast. I mean, maybe Tony Danza doesn't have a lot of critical acclaim for his acting skills, but
I don't know. She's out of control. Gypped at the Oscars that year.
But I mean, Julianne Moore, obviously an established top of the food chain actress, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt's very good in his own right. And for what she was asked to do, again, she's playing a caricature of, you know, a very naive, very stereotypical Jersey girl, and she was totally believable in that. And, you know, as much as in most movies you really like her because she has kind of that feel about her that you could see, like, if you met her in real life after you pissed yourself, like, she'd probably not laugh at you. But in this movie, she was exactly what she was supposed to be, kind of in some ways very similar to Joey's character, but sort of the exact opposite of that as well.
This movie, I wanted to like it more. It was,
I agree with you.
It was too Jersey for me, I think. Like, I felt like that part of it was a little overdone and didn't really add to it, where it's like, if everybody didn't have these overly thick accents, I feel like you could have made the same movie and actually drive the point a little bit more. My number three, if we have crossover, I think this would be one of them, because I think there's two, like, tentpole Scarlett Johansson movies as far as her bursting onto the scene. There's one that I left off because I'm almost positive you'll have it.
You're wrong.
Okay, then maybe we'll talk about it later anyway. This is 2001's Ghost World, which she had been acting for a bit before this one, but this in combination with the other one a couple years later is what really put Scarlett Johansson on the map.
You, like, mean Eight-Legged Freaks?
Yes, and it was really good. Like, she's a chameleon. Like, she's a gorgeous, beautiful chameleon, because I can buy her in every role we've ever seen her in. And her as, like, a nerdy, awkward high school girl, like, dirty high school awkward girl shouldn't look as good as Scarlett Johansson, but she made it work. Like, I bought that character. I believed her and Thora Birch as these kind of outcasts that really were just doing their own thing. And, you know, their dynamic was really good. And it's more a Thora Birch movie. Like, it's absolutely her movie. But her chemistry with Scarlett was huge. And the main reason why this movie kind of blew up. Like, I don't think without them having the chemistry they do, I think this movie kind of gets brushed under the rug. But, you know, and then Buscemi in there. It's a really good movie. And then Dave Sheridan comes in and steals his scenes. This is right when Dave Sheridan was poised to break out big, and he didn't. I really love this movie. I really love Scarlett in it, even though she is, you know, second or third fiddle to Thora Birch and Steve Buscemi. But she does exactly what she needs to do in this movie, and she portrays everything she's supposed to do pretty great. And, I mean, this is a perfect example early on of, like, oh, this isn't just, you know, a beautiful actress that's going to rely on that. Like, she's challenging herself already this early in her career to do stuff like this, which I thought was really, really cool. And she hasn't really let up since. I mean, this movie was 13 years ago, and she's still, you know, she's now one of the biggest movie stars ever, still putting out, you know, different movies all the time that range all over the place.
I guess you could say my number three is a different movie. It also belongs, as much as my five and four belong into the, I wanted to like them more than I did. My number four and my number three kind of fall in the, I like what you're saying here kind of movies. And it is 2013's Her, directed by Spike Jonze, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Scarlett Johansson, and Amy Adams. The premise behind the movie is pretty apparent. I think you can really figure out what's going on from the trailer. But I don't feel like at any point it became preachy. It's obvious without really beating you over the head and making you feel, I guess, guilty or making you feel bad at any point for exhibiting some form of the behavior that Joaquin Phoenix and most everyone else, at the very least, everyone else in the movie is exhibiting. It does succeed as a love story, which I think, I don't want to say that this is a gimmicky film, because it's not, but it would be very easy for a love story like this to come off as really, really creepy or really, really forced. And I give a ton of credit to Joaquin for making it relatable. Like Gosling does in Lars and the Real Girl, he makes you feel that a relationship which on the surface wouldn't seem compatible in the least to a normal relationship, really at its core, they're similar and relatable. I think Scarlett has a great voice and absolutely a perfect tone for this type of role. And I think she did tremendous with what she had to work with. But for me, this is Joaquin's movie. His ability to pretty much act in a vacuum, even when he's not talking, when he's just listening to her, his ability to emote really kind of carries the story as much as, you know, the dialogue does and the action does. To me, it's just his reaction to a voice makes you feel exactly what he's feeling and brings you along in the story. The more I get away from this movie, the more I like it.
Which is weird, because you were all about this movie right after seeing it.
I wanted this to be like one of my favorite movies ever, and I thought it was going to be. I liked it when it first came out, but I think now I'm appreciating it more because of Joaquin. And I always gave him a lot of credit for this movie, but I think the more that I really consider it, the more I think, Jesus Christ, he was amazing. And the fact that this movie, again, we talked about Hitchcock getting kind of shut out at the Oscars. This movie, I think, really did kind of, maybe not the movie as a whole, but I think
the acting.
Yes. Joaquin specifically. And I don't, Jones wasn't even nominated as director, was he?
No, he just got screenplay.
Screenplay. And I think, did it get nominated for Best Picture too?
I think it did. Yeah.
I do feel like Joaquin got hosed. I mean, he wasn't going to win this year. Fine. But at least a nod, I think, would have been appropriate. As much as, you know, maybe it's challenging Johansson to play a character that has no physical form, that's a voiceover. You know, people do that. But I think Joaquin very much challenged in this movie and absolutely is up to it.
Yeah, I feel like Joaquin didn't get enough credit, but I've been on the record saying I would have nominated Scarlett for this movie. I absolutely think she deserved some recognition for her acting in this, because as being just a voice, it was a phenomenal performance from her. Like, you listen to that and it's like, oh, I could fall in love with that. She wasn't just reading lines. She could have just went into a studio, read the lines, and been done with the movie. There was actually heart to him. You could feel emotion in what she was saying. She felt human. Like, she 100% made his phone feel like a human.
And I think that's the tone that I was talking about. Like, it's not just like, oh, she sounds like a hot chick. No, yeah. She sounds like she legitimately cares.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, she had heart, and she had depth to what she was saying. She wasn't just reading lines. Like, I feel like she put just as much heart and soul into that performance as she would have had she been in front of Joaquin. So I feel like she got gypped, because I think what she did as an actress in that movie is very, very difficult. It's not just reading lines into a mic. It's acting into a mic without even having, you know, yeah, you can do the cartoon characters where you see what's going on. She didn't have that. There was no action to her words, and she still made them breathe. My number two, I mentioned that she didn't just go make a living off of romantic comedies. When she did do them, they're like We Bought a Zoo, or like 2004's In Good Company, which is a lot more than just a romantic comedy. I love Topher Grace. I wish I lived in a world where Topher Grace and Adam Brody were the biggest movie stars in the world, because I love both of them.
I wish I lived in that world too, man. I'd be swimming in chicks.
Yeah. Topher is so good, and his run is like a leading movies. Didn't last very long, but at least In Good Company came out of it, directed by Paul Weitz and written by Paul Weitz. Really good movie. I mean, Dennis Quaid is a movie star. He was huge in the 80s and 90s, and this is an older Dennis Quaid. His new boss is half his age, and he has to realize his new boss isn't much older than his daughter, and then they start sleeping together. His boss and his daughter, not him and his daughter.
Or not him and him.
Yeah, I just think it's a really good, it was funny. You know, I love the dynamic between Topher and Dennis Quaid, and between Topher and Scarlett, and between Dennis Quaid and Scarlett, and between, I just, all the dynamic, like the three leads, how they interact with each other, it is very, very, very good. It feels like a very real movie. It wasn't just, they don't get along, I bet they end up together in the end. So that's why I mean, like, it's not your standard romantic comedy, because there was a lot more going on. It was more about Dennis Quaid and Topher Grace than it was Topher Grace and Scarlett Johansson. It's just a really, really good movie. And Paul Weitz is, you know, he's generally high quality stuff. And this one seems to be one of his lesser loved ones. Like, he doesn't really seem to, this one doesn't get brought up a bunch, but I absolutely love it. Topher and Dennis Quaid and Scarlett, that trifecta there was like the perfect dynamic of the three to lead the movie. And I really, really love this movie.
Speaking of loving movies, while this is only my second favorite Scarlett Johansson movie, brace yourself for a wild statement. This is my favorite, far and away my favorite Christopher Nolan joint. It is The Prestige from 2006, directed by Nolan, starring Hugh Jackman, Christian Bale, and Johansson. I like the Batman movies just fine, whatever. But I feel like when Nolan is behind the camera, he's always trying to pull off the world's greatest magic trick with his movies. He's like the Chris Angel of directors. He's trying to mind freak you every time. There's another director that I can think of that does that, by the name of M. Night Shyamalan. The difference between the two is at the end of an M. Night movie, barring perhaps The Sixth Sense, you just feel pissed that he's doing it again, and you're kind of insulted. At the end of a Christopher Nolan movie, at least I'm sitting there trying to figure out what the hell just happened. I know I got tricked, I got bamboozled, but I need to see the movie once or twice to really kind of pick up on it. But I think that this particular tactic works awesome in this movie, because that's how a magic trick is set up. There's a scene in the movie where Michael Caine is the mentor for both Jackman and Christian Bale, and he explains what makes a good magic trick. It's set up in three particular stages, not unlike the three acts of a good story arc. the twist finish that I feel like Nolan is always building towards, or the prestige, as it's called in the world of Gandalf and David Copperfield, perfectly fits this story. In a magic trick, the end is exactly what it is. It's a trick. So you feel like a twist ending. Of course, the movie couldn't just end with, voila, there's got to be something. And not only do you get a little twist, they take you behind the curtain. You see how the twist is made. So you get a little bit of that. Oh, I always wondered how magic tricks are done. It's half of that show where the magician always had the mask on and he showed you how people did magic tricks, but in a very Christopher Nolan kind of way. There's absolutely nothing that I don't like about the movie. I think Hugh Jackman was great. David Bowie as Tesla, really, really good. And Andy Serkis actually being able to act and not have to be covered in ping pong balls is pretty rad, too. This was a wonderfully acted movie. I don't want to say that I think that Christopher Nolan movies are pretentious, but this one I feel like is not pretentious. Or if it is, it's because it perfectly mirrors the subject matter.
Sometimes you see movies and you dislike them, and then years later you think, it's one of those that you think maybe you need to give it another try. I didn't like this when I first saw it. And my sum up of, I don't hate Christopher Nolan. I think Christopher Nolan makes fantastic movies, but I don't put them on another level like a lot of people do.
I don't think either of us really do.
No, and the way I sum up Christopher Nolan is he's great at making really smart movies for really dumb people. And The Prestige is the perfect example of that, because I feel like there was a lot of great going on in The Prestige, but I feel like the twist was telegraphed a little bit too much. Like to me, I just felt like it was saying like, hey, look, this is going to come back later. Like, I just feel like there's characters in his movies that are telling you to like, hey, look at this is important, you know, think of this later. Like I just get that feeling from a lot of his movies, and none more so than The Prestige. But I do want to go back and watch it, because I like Bale, I like Jackman, I love Scarlett, I love Piper Perabo. So it's one of those on my list that it's like I need to go back and rewatch it, because I remember being underwhelmed when it came out, and I saw the twist from a while ago, and you know, I don't always try to pick the twist. I'm not one of those that's always guessing, but I saw it coming, and maybe that took away my enjoyment, but I feel like I saw it coming because it was telegraphed and it was kind of spelled out for you before it happened. I mean, maybe I'll give it another try, but I don't remember much about it. I don't remember Scarlett that much in it, or, you know, I remember a lot about it. I feel like I need to go back and revisit this one. My number one, not a Christopher Nolan movie, but it is from this year. It's 2014's. Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I really like her as Black Widow, as Natasha Romanoff. And this movie really let her shine. Like, yeah, she showed up in Iron Man 3. She was, you know, the lust object of Robert Downey Jr. that turned into a super spy. Yeah, she was in the Avengers, but there's so much going on in that movie. She didn't have a lot of room to work with. Like, her and Renner's interactions were really good, but they were limited because there was so much else going on. She's co-pilot of this movie. This was a Chris Evans and Scarlett Johansson movie, and I thought it worked really, really well, much better than it did in The Nanny Diaries, which was also a Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson movie, or The Perfect Score. The chemistry between the two was fantastic, and to pull that off in a non-romantic movie, and I think that's what I liked the most about it, is it wasn't your male-female action movie where they fall in love at the end. No, it was just male-female action movie because he needs somebody he can rely on, and she kicks a lot of ass. So I thought it was really progressive from like a female action movie kind of story, because she wasn't just eye candy in this movie. She had a critical part in the story. She was very essential to it, and she wasn't just in tight leather the whole time. So I really love this movie, and I really loved her in it, especially the dynamic between her and Chris Evans. I just thought was fantastic, and it's such a fun movie. It's such a good movie, and she's such a big part of it, because it's not a Captain America movie. It's a buddy movie. It's, you know, they're Riggs and Murtaugh in this movie, and I really liked that aspect. I thought it was a different way to take a Captain America movie, And her performance had a lot to do with that, because any of the scenes with her and Chris Evans, just fun to watch. Any scenes with her fighting, like her fight with the Winter Soldier, awesome to watch. That's why I'm excited for Lucy, because I like her in this action role. Like, I think she pulls it off very, very well. So I'm excited to see Lucy, because I like when, you know, Scarlett Johansson has some swagger to her in her characters, and Black Widow definitely has some of that ScarJo swagger
that we've come to know so well. I'm glad that you mentioned Captain America 2 as your favorite, because my favorite is also a Chris Evans joint, starring also Scarlett Johansson, Chris Hemsworth, and Robert Downey Jr. It's The Avengers from 2012, directed by Joss Whedon. I don't have much to say about this movie that I haven't already been said in any of the episodes, seemingly several, that we've dedicated to The Avengers. Check out our anniversary episode a couple months back to hear me gush about how much I love this. I agree with you. It's not the best showcase of the Black Widow. That's absolutely hands down Captain America 2. But I feel like The Avengers is the best Marvel movie to date, and I think it's the perfect example of how comic book movies can and should work on the big screen. This easily could have been a complete dumpster fire with the amount of characters that are in there, not just, you know, with the amount of heroes that are in there, but you throw in your villains, throw in trying to tie together threads from several other movies leading up to it. I mean, it was ridiculously ambitious. And I would say, despite having a director like Joss Whedon, the odds were that this was going to absolutely just crash and burn. And it ended up being, you know, one of the most successful films ever. And I'm so pumped about, you know, seeing what Marvel does going forward, whether it is Captain America 2, which I liked a lot more than I liked the first one, you know, whether it is new spinoff like the Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't have any particular love for any of those characters, but what I do have love for is what Marvel's done to this point, what they've been able to do, and what I imagine they'll do in the future. From what I understand, no Scarlett Johansson in Guardians of the Galaxy, but I do hope to see more of the Black Widow. I wouldn't be pissed off at all if she got her own spinoff. I feel like she damn near did in Captain America 2, and from what I saw of that, she could absolutely pull it off.
And that's my thing. Like, Black Widow isn't the kind of character that really should have her own movie. And like I said, my favorite parts of her in The Avengers were her and Renner's scenes. And then I loved her dynamic with Chris Evans in Captain America 2. So it's like, can this character carry off a solo movie? If it's Scarlett Johansson, yes, because she could carry it off. So even though that character doesn't necessarily need a solo movie, and that her best parts has been her acting with other people, I would be 100% for a Black Widow movie, which maybe we'll learn more about whether that's happening for real or not in a couple of weeks. But she's so good in the Marvel Universe, and she's one of the breakouts of it. Okay, you're Thor, you're Hulk, all those are supposed to be big stars, you know? She took Black Widow, which is kind of a secondary character, and now it's a household name because she played it so well and she's made that character so likable. She found a perfect home there. So did you have any also-rans?
I think the one that we both kind of danced around.
Lost in Translation.
Yeah. I have a really tough time with this movie because I love Bill Murray. Absolutely love him. And I love watching him in this movie. There's not a lot else I like about the movie. It's really tough. I have no particular love for Sofia Coppola. I mean, Scarlett's fine in this, but for me, I just like watching Bill Murray in Lost in Translation. So I couldn't put it, I really couldn't put it on my list because I don't like it better than Black Dahlia.
It's what I was hinting at when I talked about Ghost World, because I feel like when you talk about like great ScarJo movies, I feel like Ghost World and Lost in Translation are going to be some of the first to come to people's minds, because I think they're the first, like they're her breakouts. I mean, that's what kind of set the tone that like, oh, this girl can act and she's going to have an awesome career. Another one that I thought did that went under the radar was Love Song for Bobby Long. I really love that movie. It's her and Travolta. She plays just like a white trash mom. Like, she's really good in it. And perfect score. I'm a sucker for Chris Evans. And that you put Chris Evans, former Cav great Darius Miles, Erica Christensen, and ScarJo in a movie. Like, how do you not have fun with that? And then I had the Avengers and Her that probably would have made my list if I didn't think they'd make yours. And they both did, so I was smart to leave those off. But, you know, I'm excited for Lucy. She does different stuff. Even that Under the Skin that came out earlier this year. It hit iTunes about a month ago. I like her doing stuff like that. Even though I wasn't into that movie, it's a little too, I don't know how to describe it other than pretentious-y, kind
of. Fine. We've mentioned that enough. We might as well just keep that going.
Yeah.
I've said that enough this episode.
I didn't like it, but I like her doing movies like that. So that's the big thing about her. She's always been more than a pretty face, and she's never just relied on being a pretty face, which makes me respect the hell out of her. And I love watching her act for numerous reasons.
I mentioned Eight-Legged Freaks. I legitimately like that movie. I understand what they're doing there, and I'm cool with it. I'm on board with it. Now, I know that most people probably wouldn't like that, but I guess kind of another movie that I wanted to at least mention was you talk about that kind of period in her career where I think people were kind of starting to take note of her. Girl with the Pearl Earring, I thought she was really, really good in that. I mean, I don't really like the movie all that much, but you can tell, like, she has a lot of talent. I mean, I think that's more of a showcase for her acting ability than maybe Lost in Translation. They were both the same year. They were both 2003. But I feel like Girl with a Pearl Earring is her movie.
Yeah.
And Lost in Translation is Murray's movie.
Yeah. And then she had that string of, you know, the Woody Allen movies that I wasn't a big fan of any of them, but she was really good in Match Point. Scoop was her movie, which she was enjoyable in that. And then she did the Vicky Cristina Barcelona. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, her career's all over the place. Like, you talk about somebody with a very varied resume, because even those three Woody Allen movies are all very different. She's just fun to watch. I'm excited to see where she goes from here. I think she's going to have a pretty good career.
Yeah, I think that's she stopped acting, like, after she's done with the Avengers. Like, I think she's already had a pretty good career. But if you were a big fan of the SpongeBob movie and you're pissed off that we left that off the list, we would love to hear about it. moviesonup@gmail.com. That's the email address. You can send your thoughts to us via Twitter @moviesonup on the Twitter machine, or leave something on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. That'll do it for us this week. But as Dave mentioned to me before we started recording, we actually do kind of have a plan going forward. So we'll go ahead and we won't keep it a secret from you.
Next week, we're going to talk about our favorite Space Team movies. I'm excited for that one because I love Space Team movies. So
who doesn't?
Yeah. Space Team movies, one of the best genres ever. So what are your favorite Space Team movies? Send them to us, whether you email them, Twitter us, Facebook us. I don't care. I'm just excited for that. We actually have the next 2 weeks planned, which I'm excited for both of them.
I was going to say, as excited about Space Team movies as you are, I have a feeling that the episode following that might be a little bit more high on your list.
I'm excited about it. And I'll get angry about it all at the same time. But you'll find out what that is either next week or in 2 weeks from now. Until then,
I guess we are keeping a secret. Keep it up.